Well, good morning, everyone. You already know who I am. I'm Barry Mariano. I'm the pastor, life pastor here at Christ Church, and it really is a privilege to be introducing Denise Holtz and Sister Joel. And we had a speaker from the FBI. Let me share really quickly. This is being recorded as well, so later when we get the questions and answers, perhaps we'll repeat the question to make sure that it gets on the recording. But several years ago, we had an FBI agent come on a Sunday morning and share on this subject, and our church was profoundly impacted. I do a lot of the counseling here, and I was just sharing with Officer Holtz, FBI special agent. She doesn't want me to say a whole lot more about her in terms of a bio. She does great work, but I just had a man yesterday in my office who disclosed some things that he was doing. It was just unbelievable. And the police were at his place taking his computers, and you can just kind of read between the lines. And he may be arrested as we speak here now and stand here and sit here now. So Denise Holtz is from the FBI. She's from the Civil Rights Division in Pittsburgh here, and she's going to be presenting a time here. And then Sister from the East End of Pittsburgh, born and raised from the Dominican Sisters of Peace. She's the director of the RCIA for the Catholic Parishes in McKeesport, Sister Mary Jewel Campbell. It's a distinct privilege to have both of you here this morning addressing this issue of human trafficking. And you are teaching in 8 parishes presently. That is phenomenal, preparing them for their roles in the Catholic faith. And she also works in the field of marriage preparations, which I do as well here at Christ Church. I'm meeting with 5 couples. That's so important for marriages. She's earned a master's degree in education through Duquesne University and a second master in theology from the University of Dayton. She is fundamentally an educator and a writer. She wrote a book entitled How to Teach Your Children Right from Wrong. I was just having a discussion yesterday with someone in our culture today. Many, many young people simply do not know right from wrong manners. And she is the author of several magazine articles. She taught in New York, Columbus, and colleges, churches, and hospitals for the Dominican Sisters. She has traveled all over the country working with individual parishes to develop a better understanding of the charisma of their congregation. And for 14 years, she was the pastor associate at St. Pius in McKeesport, which she enjoyed tremendously. So, Father, we thank you today for Agent Holtz and for Sister Joel, and we ask that you would bless them, bless our time with them as each of them share, and then we will have opportunities at the close of our time this morning to ask them questions. Bless our time in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's welcome both of them right now with a round of applause. Can we do that?
Thank you. As he said, I'm Sister Joel Campbell. I'm a Dominican Sister of Peace, and people often ask, you know, how sisters got involved in the human trafficking thing. You expect Denise to be involved in it, heavily, you know, law enforcement. Right? Yeah, up to the eyebrows. But sisters, you know, where do they fit in all of this? I'm part of a group of nearly 600 women, Dominican sisters, who every 6 years we elect new leadership. In fact, we just did it 2 weeks ago. And at that same time, we outline our commitments that we want to share over the next six years, because we're involved in all different ministries. There are only 4 of us currently in Pittsburgh. There used to be a lot more, but we went to other places where there were fewer sisters. Anyway, we're all scattered all over the United States, but we picked things that we do want to work on together. And the idea is you don't have to do all of them, you don't have to do all 6, but you pick one of them and you work on it. One of them had to do with working with systems that oppress women and children. Trafficking fits perfectly. And so I'm part of that committee, and we meet by conference call, and we support each other. The calls come in from Massachusetts to Kansas, from Michigan to New Orleans. We do some things together if we can, but the idea is that we work with whatever is in the area where we are, and then sometimes we invent new things. Okay? In the Pittsburgh setting, I've worked, too, with another group of sisters who are already here. There's 12 different congregations who work together on justice issues. They call themselves the Path to Justice. They're Franciscans, Benedictines, Mercies, Charity. I'm the Dominican, the one Dominican. But I work with them because they had already begun some of these things. I've attended the coalition meetings with the FBI, and I've learned a lot from them. And I've been active with men and women who are Dominican associates. They've learned how to be Dominicans, and they do their work in the world, but we meet together. And they worked with me on the SOAP project, which I'll describe later. I also speak at church meetings all over the place, and I sort of stumbled into a ministry. I was just telling Denise about it. I also give workshops to the housekeeping staffs of hotels and motels where trafficking happens. I set up a meeting through the manager, and I teach these people what to look for. I call them red flags. And then what to do when they're pretty sure that it's happening in their hotel, motel. And as I said to her, it's important that we also get the police in on this so that the police don't come in and arrest the 14-year-old girl. You wait until the end, until the person who brought her there comes to collect her, then you get him, you know. So I've done some many things around this. And today I'd like to talk to two different groups. I'm going to do the churches first, and then healthcare personnel, okay? It seems like that's a good place to begin to ask the question, where do churches fit in the picture of the fight against human trafficking, the second biggest crime worldwide today? And I'd answer that by saying, use what you already have. What do you have? You have an assembly of good people who know how to work together on justice issues. They've done things before. Maybe not all of them, but you have people there. Some people who can see working on this topic as part of the mandate of Matthew 25. I was hungry and you gave me to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me to drink. Sick and in prison and you visited me. Today we can say, I was trafficked, particularly as a youngster. I was trafficked and you came to my aid. What is badly needed, and I find this as I go around, is education or awareness about the problem. You know, people need to know that it's highly profitable for the pimp. That's why it's so, you know, prevalent. They make over $300,000 a year, and each pimp has the average of 4 girls. And younger girls are more highly valued, so they're always on the lookout for 13, 14-year-olds. These children are advertised on the Internet. Used to be 1 or 2, you know, Backpage was a big one. But right now we know that there are over 100 different websites where you can find child prostitutes. When one shuts down, another one pops up. Before large sporting events, and Pittsburgh is a big sporting town, before large sporting events, the traffickers, and traffickers can be men, women, couples, they come into the city and the whole process becomes activated. And as many as 80 or 90 boys and girls are available for sale. The youngsters themselves refer to what they do as being in the life. They don't use the word traffic. And often they don't see them, most often they don't see themselves as victims to be rescued. Because they come from dysfunctional families where life has been hard before this. They've been living with mom and her boyfriend, and the boyfriend changes from time to time, or dad and his girlfriend. They become runaways. They sleep on the couches of their friends' homes, and they get their meals. They get breakfast and lunch at school. They're easy targets for traffickers who troll the malls looking for them. And for their part, these youngsters are looking to escape the situations that they're coming from, the dysfunctional families. And so they turn to the first adult who poses as a source of comfort for them. Traffickers understand how the brains of these children work. The normal 13-year-old, and I ask you to consult your own experience, if you can put yourself back when you were 13. The normal 13-year-old wants to be anything but 13. If you have a 13-year-old, you know that too. They believe that life begins at 16. They long to dress and act as if they're older. They can't wait to be older. For a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old to be told that they are sexy, that's a breathtaking compliment to them. They want to hear more. In case you haven't noticed, we live in a highly sexualized environment where sex as entertainment is accepted as normal. And this whole environment has moved in the direction of younger and younger children. Getting pregnant as a teen is a way to get on TV. The average age for a Playboy bunny to move into Hugh Hefner's mansion, and yes, that's still going on, the average age is 16. One sex trafficker said he didn't have to groom his victims because society did it for him. When I tell this to church groups, I find that some people are shocked by this. But you have to step back and remember that it didn't happen overnight. Teresa Flores, who herself was trafficked and who works with our sisters in Columbus, Ohio, Teresa says that she thinks it all started back in the roaring 20s with the flappers. The flappers, remember, they shocked the country by wearing short dresses and smoking. And before then, the dresses were all the way down, just before, up above the ankle. Think Downton Abbey. We went from Downton Abbey to the flappers. Okay? They were a disgrace at first. Then time passed and we got used to it. Several decades later, we had a famous singer who popularized wearing tight clothing on stage. Elvis Presley gyrated in skin-tight outfits that so shocked some people that the producers only took pictures of him from the waist up. Again, time passed, and we got used to it. In the 80s and 90s, Madonna sexualized the music industry with new lyrics and with wearing lingerie on stage. Remember the song, Like a Virgin? Before Madonna's time, the word virgin was either whispered or it was referred to the Blessed Virgin Mary, you know? And she made it the title of a song, and she began wearing lingerie on stage. And again, time passed, and we got used to it, so that by the time Britney Spears came along wearing lingerie and singing highly suggestive songs, it was no big deal. And free adolescents learned the lyrics and sang the songs. And so by now, we're long past the Britney Spears stage. You know, think Kim Kardashian. So this is the world that the young people of today live in, and it's not going to reverse itself. You know, that's the reality. And this is what the traffickers understand so well, and oftentimes good church-going parishioners don't. I think that our efforts to come to terms with trafficking in our midst has to have a many-pronged approach. First, I would say, throw your support behind those organizations and programs that are already supporting family life. And there are too many of them to even mention. And you have some of them, you know, right here today giving presentations. And that includes the mental health agencies that deal with dysfunctional families or with children at risk. If you have no training in those things, offer to volunteer anyway, and you may be surprised at the way that you can help. They'll find ways to use you. Another thing, search out things that are already going on and jump in. That sisters group that I mentioned earlier, Path to Justice, we paid for a billboard to be put up on McKnight Road. It went up in February. You may have seen it. It's on McKnight, right down near where you get on 279. It's a large billboard. It has a picture of a girl, and on one side it says, "Could you put a price on this life?" And on the other side, it said, "Unfortunately, her trafficker already has." And it has phone numbers on it. Now, we can only afford 1 month. Even with a nonprofit rate, it's $1,500. But some lady who took that road every day to work was impressed with the billboard, and she herself is collecting money to keep it up. That's what I mean by just, you know, one person, just jump in. Something's already going on. I spoke to a woman's group in a McKeesport church, and they wanted to help with the soap project. What is that? Well, the soap project involves placing small bars of hotel soap in hotels on weekends when big sports events are going to happen in the city. We chose one where there was everything. There was baseball, hockey, football, and one other thing, something. Anyhow, there were four different things going on, so we picked that weekend. The bars of soap that we give to the hotels have a sticker placed on the back so that you can't open the soap until you deal with the sticker. It's a red sticker, and it says, "Are you being forced to do something you do not want to do? Do you know anyone who's being forced into prostitution? If so, call 1-888-3737. That's the national hotline for trafficking. Soap was placed in hotels in Jersey and in New York last year at Super Bowl time, and calls came in to the hotline from over 90 women and girls. I had doubts about this in the beginning. You know, I thought as soon as the traffickers find out that the soap's there, they're not going to use that hotel. You know, it's easy for them to move around. But apparently it does work with some. Okay. So in my case, this woman's group that I spoke to in the case sport wanted to do something, so I said, okay, I got a job for you. I'll bring in 1,000 bars of soap, and you guys put the stickers on the back. And they did that. In 1 hour, they put on, you know, 1,000 stickers, and they liked doing it. Then they also contributed money for a second case of soap. Soap is $250 now for a case of 1,000. So we distributed, these associates and I distributed the soap to hotels in Monroeville and along Route 51. And we have another case ready, and we're going to be working in the North Hills next week, some of the other sisters and I. And the soap that we're giving out has already been stickered by who? Volunteers. You know, people want to do something, but you don't know what to do. Okay? Another way to help, and Denise is going to tell you about the efforts that she's part of in caring for women and girls after they've been, you know, away from the traffic light. There's a great need there. Gathering items to help her, it would be a great project for a youth group. You know? Another idea. There's a store on McKnight Road called Repurposed. You may have known them. Okay. Repurposed sells donated secondhand clothing, and some of it's good. Still has tags on it. Good stuff. Repurposed secondhand clothing and other household items, and all of the proceeds from this store go to the support of a house called Living in Liberty that can give care and support in a safe environment to four women. They only have four bedrooms. Four women recently rescued from trafficking. Some elderly sisters that I know, people in their 80s and 90s, you know, they live in the mother houses there along McKnight Road. They volunteer in this store. They go over and give a couple of hours a week, you know, to help sell the stuff, because it's all run on volunteers. Just raising awareness of the problem is a big help. There are numerous resources for youth group leaders, and I'm going to mention just a few. One is called Breaking the Links, and it's a program that walks participants through how to be a peer leader in a fight to end modern slavery. And this program includes a video. The video is called Not My Life, and it has a guided discussion plan. And Not My Life is a grooming, it includes awareness of the grooming process so that kids will know, they'll be aware if they or a friend is in danger of being recruited. Kids need to know what recruitment is really like. This is a preventive measure. And I have this on one of the handouts over there. I have the references to these things that I'm going to tell you about. If the church wants to do this with their youngsters, I refer them also to do that program. Or if you want to do something else, there's a great thing called Nest Educators, all one word, Nest Educators. Nest Educators has more information than you could ever use. It's a wonderful resource. The Nest part stands for National Organization of Educators Against Trafficking. If I were working with a youth group, I'd do three things. I'd give them a program. I'd maybe twice during the course of the program, I'd have liturgies with them or rituals with them. I can give you some ideas about this later on. I didn't build it into the talk. But have some prayer instances and then build in service. So, you know, they could be learning, they could be praying, and they could be collecting things to give Denise. Okay? Lots of things. My last piece of advice is directed toward parents. If you have young children, be aware of what they're watching on the internet. Have passwords on children's computers. Have a mobile tracker on a child's mobile phone so that you know where they are at all times. Get the phone number of the mother of all of your kids' friends so that if they come up missing, you can begin to track them. Some red flags. If you have a teenager who has a much older boyfriend, spends a lot of time with him, and is evasive about where they go. Well, teenagers are evasive anyway, but, you know, there's something really wrong about a 13-year-old dating a 19-year-old. Okay? If she dresses inappropriately for her age, if she has, this is important, unexplained bruise marks or seems tired all the time, if she has a cell phone that her boyfriend bought her and she uses it just with him. This may not be your child, but your child may know someone in school who fits the picture. And remember, they don't use the word trafficking. They call it being in the life. And sometimes the other kids envy them because they have money. You know, they're supplied with spending money. They have more spending money than the other kids. Finally, for anybody, remember the category that's high at risk. These kids from the dysfunctional families, these runaways. Do whatever you can to show love and support to a young person caught in the web of a dysfunctional family situation. They didn't ask for this. They were born into this family. By the time they're found later on, they're hard. They're really hard. But they didn't start out that way. These could be, you know, family members, nieces or nephews, neighborhood kids. In whatever way you can, if you know somebody like that, be a mentor to them. Someone who will listen to them and give them good advice. They could have their life changed for the worst by coming into contact with a trafficker who shows them attention and concern. And the first step, that's the first step in pulling them into prostitution slavery, and it works every time. These kids crave attention from an older person because that's what's missing in their home. So you could be the good person in their life who feels this need for them before they get trapped. Do I have any healthcare professionals here? Couple, okay. Okay, I'll jump into it then. In the healthcare professional profession, nursing professionals, there's multiple resources for you too. And just in case, I refer especially to a site called Safe Horizon. Safe Horizon, and I'll share some of the tips that I found from there. Nursing professionals, you can meet victims in a variety of ways. The emergency room, community centers, public health departments. And unfortunately, awareness training for nursing and healthcare staff is not happening across the board as it should. And victims are not being identified at the rate they should because of that. First of all, know that a trafficked person can be male, female, or transgender. They may be adults, they may be minors. They can be foreign nationals or U.S. citizens. They can be labor trafficked or sex trafficked. And some of the tactics used by traffickers you may have seen before because they mimic the dynamics of domestic violence or batterers. Some red flags in healthcare settings. There's a suspicious employment situation. When you're trying to get some information from them when they first appear, you know, they don't want to tell you. Well, no. They seem to have a dependence on a friend or coworker who sticks to them like glue and wants to answer all the questions. There's evidence of an abusive relationship. They may provide the healthcare provider with contradictory information. They show evidence of suicidal depression or just depression, fearfulness, anxiety, or trauma symptoms. They have unrelated injuries, and their explanations are inconsistent with the injuries. They have old injuries, you'll see, bruises that have yellowed or turned green. This isn't the first time they've been hurt. There are multiple, you may see multiple sexually transmitted infections or abortions, and of course, evidence of sexual abuse. You'll see delayed medical care. Now, you won't see all of these on everybody, but these are some of the red flags. headaches, fatigue, abdominal pain, back pain, high blood pressure, untreated dental problems, and of course, drug and alcohol problems. Some trauma indicators. Some of them have unusual reactions to gynecological or breast exams. There'll be some tensing up, some sobbing, as if expecting intense pain. Some of them hyperventilate or faint. With younger children, you'll see sexualized behavior or seductiveness that's very inappropriate in a child. And they seek inappropriate proximity to the nurse or doctor. Something weird is going on. You'll see either of these two things, either jerking or flinching away from contact, or the opposite, a complete lack of responsiveness, sort of out of it, not even responding to their own name. And lesser than that, you're just confused and have difficulty paying attention to you. The survivor's trauma and the survivor's situation impacts the medical assessment. Why? Because they feared being identified as a victim. Why do they fear? Because of retaliation by the trafficker. And retaliation, one of the most common ways of keeping control over them are threats made against family members or loved ones. Again, a woman who was trafficked when she was 14. They said if she said a word to anybody, they would kill her family, starting with her little brother. Her little brother was 7. And to make sure that she got the message, that afternoon they drove past her house and the family dog was playing in the front yard and they shot the dog in a drive-by. And then the next day they began following her little brother to school, and so naturally she was terrified. Okay. They fear also deportation. They have problems with social service interventions. Why? Because some of them have had problems. They experienced harassment or abuse in foster care placements, and they blame the social care person for getting them into that. They have trouble recounting their own history or details about their life, naturally. They, of course, do not self-identify as a victim. They have loyalty. They exhibit loyalty to the traffickers. There may be cultural or language difficulties, and they exhibit a mistrust of professional people, police, healthcare people, and a limited understanding, I would say zero understanding, of their own rights. Some best practices when working with them. Use the same words that the patient uses and don't correct them, especially if it refers to their situation. Be open to unfamiliar narratives and stories, because you're going to hear some awful stuff, if they talk at all. Use your authority to create a safe place for talking, and always speak to the patient privately, and that may not be easy because the person who brought them in wants to stick to them like glue. So if possible, do everything you can. Say, wait out there, we'll come and get you when we're finished. But peel them away from whoever it is who brought them in. Always use a professional interpreter services where there's a language barrier. Do not rely on the friend or associate who brought them in to do the translating. Use trauma-informed, non-judgmental approaches when interviewing them. Ask simple, direct questions. And I think this one isn't too simple, but are you in a personal or work-related relationship with a person who physically harms you? Or say, you seem to be in a hurry to leave. We're here to help you. It's important that you remain with us for treatment. What's making you feel anxious right now? Or have you been hurt while working on the job, either by someone you work for or someone you work with? Assess their safety by asking, are you afraid to go home? Do you have a safe place to stay? And what will happen if you don't go home this evening, if we want to keep you here for a while? If the identified patient is not ready to accept your help, I'd say validate their feelings and reassure them that they have the choice not to accept your help at that time, but give them things they can do in the future, because, you know, after they have a chance to think it over and they feel that, you know, and are better in a safe place, they may use it. But make sure that it's always oral. Don't write something down, because the trafficker can take it away from them. And if they're confused and you see they're not getting it, just make it real simple. Say, come back here. Come back here. You know this place. And someone will listen to you. Okay? Do not ask about the patient's immigration status. They could freak out. And provide, if possible, the patient with information about a social service agency, children and youth and families, or the hotline 188-3737, or I think they can also call the FBI, right? You know? Okay? So my information regarding referrals is rather general, because I know that Denise deals with the Pittsburgh scene on a daily basis, and she can give you current information about this. And so I'm going to have her pick up from here. Okay?
Thank you, Sister. Okay. I'm a very different speaker than Sister is. She's very good. I move a lot. My hands are from the south. I talk fast. And usually this presentation is about an hour, so we have a half hour. So I'll go through it as quickly as possible. I want to talk to you about what we do in the FBI and how we got to where we are today and how we're still not quite getting it right and how you guys can help us. So we'll go briefly through that. First, I want to introduce Bridget, who's in the corner, who's sitting right there. Bridget's our victim specialist in the FBI. We work all of our cases together. Because ultimately, when we deal with our victims, or we're talking to our victims, I'm the bad guy, and she's the good guy. Because these victims, as Sister Joel said, it's very different than anything I've worked before. I've been an agent for 17 years. The first 11 were crimes against children. And finally, after, unfortunately, our second kidnapping, our second dead child, I realized it was probably time to move on. So I asked to be transferred to our Civil Rights Division, which is where I am at now, and work human trafficking. And I was very busy working crimes against children, as you can imagine. I kind of went through the whole thing of the internet getting involved with our victims. I'll never forget the day that me and my partner were sitting in the office, and I said, "Do you think this internet thing's going to catch on?" And he's like, "Gosh, I sure hope not." And I said, "Do you think it'll affect crimes against children and child pornography and all that?" And he's like, "No, I can't imagine." And then by 5 years later, that's all we worked, what was happening on the internet. So we went, you know, through 11 years of that, creating task forces, creating more awareness. So then I volunteered to work human trafficking, and I went to the person who worked it before me, and I said, "So tell me what you're doing, what's happening?" And she said, "We do not have human trafficking in the FBI, or in Pittsburgh." I'm like, "All right, that's interesting." This was about 2000, it's the year before you got there, so what was that then? 2007. So I'm like, wow, I'm going to have a really boring 10 years of my career left if there's no human trafficking in Pittsburgh. So I started asking Pittsburgh Police Department, "No, we do not have it here." Pennsylvania State Police, "No, we don't have it here." And so finally I called other offices. I called Buffalo, they have it. I called Cincinnati, they have it. I called Cleveland, they have it. Now, I'm not from Pittsburgh. I'm from Kentucky. Pittsburghers love Pittsburgh. I get that. But there's no way trafficking just skipped over Pittsburgh to go somewhere else, because Pittsburgh's such a great city. So I'm thinking to myself, what are we missing? So I started researching it, and I found an organization called the Project End Human Trafficking, PEHT, PET. And Dr. Mary Burke from Carleton University had created this out of the need, because a couple years earlier, there was a human trafficking case in Pittsburgh, and there was nobody to really help her. These victims have voluminous needs, and that's where Bridget comes in. And when Sister Joel said, "Give everything to me," do not give anything to me. Give it to Bridget. Because she handles that. And she organizes it. Right now we work very closely with Northway Christian Church. Erica Chevalier is a rock star, let me tell you. If our victims have needs, which they do, we can call her on the phone, and she sends us too much stuff because she's unbelievable. But there's so much she does, and she's meeting the needs of these victims. So let me go. So 7 years ago, what we decided is the need, something's wrong here, that we are not addressing this crime in Pittsburgh. So I started on this two-year journey of education, and I talked to everybody. If they would listen to me, I would talk to them. With Dr. Mary Burke, we joined the coalition, And the first couple of times we went to coalition meetings, we were meeting in basements, we were meeting in Panera Bread, and there were three or four of us. And we would talk about what we needed to do. And then we'd leave, God bless you, we'd leave, and I would say to Mary, well, who's going to do this? And she's like, you and me. Because although everybody had their heart was in the right place, there wasn't the organization, and there wasn't the who's going to do what, because there was so much to do. So we took the coalition into the FBI space, and we made subcommittees, so different people knew there was different things. If we needed food, if we needed clothing, if we needed legal assistance, whatever was needed, we got some sort of organization. And that's where we are today. And within the last year, the FBI realized this should not be a law enforcement coalition. And some people kind of thought that it was becoming that, which we get. So we turned it back over to Project End Human Trafficking, and the social service agencies have now really run the coalition more. We go to every meeting. We meet four times a year now. It used to be the second Tuesday of every month. It's four times a year now. So if anyone's interested, let me know, and I can put your email, and you can welcome to come to these meetings. It's a group just like you that come, that want to help, join subcommittees. If you have a church that wants to get involved in this in some way, they can lead you in the right way to do it. Or you can call Erica, and she can tell you how her church does it. She has screenings of different movies and stuff, and then she has people give $5 gift cards when they come in. I just met with her yesterday, and there was a girl from her church, a 13-year-old girl from her church, that wanted to get involved. So she went around asking for donations, and she put together 25 bags to give to a victim when we take them into custody. Because when we take them to talk to them, they have nothing. They've left their clothes behind, their shoes behind. They have no personal hygiene products. They have not eaten. They have not been taken care of. They haven't been to a doctor. It's unbelievable. It's eye-opening to me, and I've been in age 17 years, every time we get a new victim, the needs that these kids, and mostly what we see here are kids that are trafficked and what we need to do to help them. And so these bags, we can give these girls a bag, and maybe it's a sweatshirt, maybe it's a clean pair of pants, gym shoes. She collected little gift cards so that they could have a free meal at Chick-fil-A. Little things like that, you wouldn't believe. Because these kids that we see are runaway, throwaway, unloved, unraised children. These are not our kids. These are kids that people are hoping that they don't ever see in their lifetime. They don't really want to notice that these kids are there. This is who we're dealing with. They've been on the street a long time. They're very savvy on the street. And this is what we have to ultimately, I have to yell at. We had to yell at one the other day. She ran away from us and put herself into a very bad position. We really thought that we would find her deceased because she really had made some bad decisions. And then that's where Bridget comes in. She also, I like to call her my sidekick because I forget everything. And I'll ask her, what's that phone number? And she remembers everything. So that's how why we work good together. But she helps them through the process. She is a social worker. She helps them through the process. So, I told you I talk fast. So, this is where we are now. Most people know Human Trafficking 101. 5 years ago, I'd go to a group, does anybody know the definition of human trafficking? And the response I would get was, a van pulls into a parking lot late at night, they open up the back of the van, 20 Hispanic males come out, and this is trafficking. Could it be trafficking? Yes. It's probably smuggling, which is different than trafficking, but it could be. That's not what we see in Pittsburgh. Absolutely not what we see. What we see in Pittsburgh is mainly sex trafficking. We do have some labor trafficking here. I have active labor trafficking cases. Usually it's sex trafficking. Our focus is on underage sex trafficking, but we do have adults. The majority of our victims are female, but we do have some male. The new group that we're seeing more and more of that are being targeted by traffickers is the LGBT community, especially the transgender. These are already kids, and in most cases, their parents and family have turned their back on. So they're on the street already because they're not being raised, they do not have a family. And in most cases, Bridget becomes the family of these kids. We had a case, which is our biggest success story, but we're talking to her when we're done. Our case is almost done. It was the first case we had, and we're talking to her, and we said, look, you're almost done with us. I mean, I've got to be annoying. Can you imagine talking to me three or four times a week? Sometimes it's annoying. Bridget sometimes wants to quit her job.
She loves
to make her clean up. So we're talking to her, and you're almost done with us, and she looks at us and starts crying and says, but you're all I have. It was me, Bridget, and our prosecutor. All she had. And I think that was our first really big case. It was our first item of experience. We, in some cases, are all they have. Because in a lot of these cases, we cannot necessarily ask the coalition to come in and help us with these victims. Because some of these victims can be violent, and they're not necessarily in the position that we can do that. So we are their lifeline. We have one that's had a child, and I think Bridget's probably the closest thing to a godmother to that child. And this victim still contacts us and is doing very well. But that's what we see. So after we got the idea after what is human trafficking 101, now our big push is, we all know what human trafficking is. A lot of people don't know what to do or how to help. But lastly, what we're really seeing now, we have a really good at identifying it. We've learned how to prosecute it. We've learned that, and I think Sister Dole said in her thing, if they talk to them, they're probably not going to talk to you. In our cases, we usually talk to them about 20 times before they really tell us what's going on, before they trust us, before they will open up. And it's usually about a year into it in some cases. And then the case I just told you about, that young woman who trusted us, I think, early on, we were getting ready to go into grand jury, which is how we thought we would prosecute, and we said, look, you cannot lie in grand jury. I mean, please, if you're the same thing, and she said, okay, I have one more thing to say, a year into our relationship. So this is what we see. Also, for the medical field, there's a few places that traffickers will let victims go. Church is one. Certain kind of grocery stores, certain kinds of stores, dollar stores and stuff. But they will let them get medical attention. Because if they're hurt, or if they're pregnant, or if something else is going on, they're useless to them. Because that's really all they care about is making money. And they can be replaced pretty easily, but they will let them go. But be careful, because the traffickers we see are violent, they carry guns, and they're dangerous. So if you see a situation, the best advice I can give you is get the child identified. Get information and call the police. The city police, if you work in the city, is on our task force. We have an officer that works with everything we do with us. They know how to identify them. It's no longer, she's just a prostitute. We don't get that anymore at all. They identify them. They talk to them. They will call me in the middle of the night. My husband loves that, too. And we get involved as quickly as we can. I'm at Schumann Juvenile Detention Center a lot. Now, another thing, I don't even know if I'm going to do this PowerPoint. I didn't do the PowerPoint. Let's see if there's anything interesting in here that I haven't said. Let's see. Oh, I don't know how to work this. Okay, we know this defines force. We have to prove force, fraud, or coercion, which, I mean, a lot of people get that. Here's the deal with force, fraud, or coercion. If we have an adult victim federally, we have to prove they were forced, there was fraud involved, or coercion in order to federally prosecute. We have to prove that. If it's a juvenile, we do not have to prove that. A juvenile cannot consent. So if it's a juvenile, that all goes out the window. If a juvenile is doing that, she said, because, I agree to do this. You can't agree to do this. If somebody's trafficking you, then you cannot agree to do this as a juvenile.
You find juvenile.
Yes. Under the age of 18, yep. In federal system. So we have a 17-year-old, we have victims that are 17. We have a case that we got 3 or 4 weeks ago, 4 juveniles. They're 15, 16, 17 years old, between the 4 of them. Juveniles that have been, and a matter of fact, one of the people talked to us and said, well, these girls said they were forced. And I said, they don't have to say they're forced. They're juveniles. In the federal system, that's all we need. I don't know how to work this. Fancy. I like to steal this little thing. Vulnerable population. So this is what we're seeing in our cases. Minors, homeless. Every one of our juvenile victims, every one has been through CYF, has been through the system. And in some way, the system has failed them. In some way. These kids do not grow up and say, one day this is what I'm going to do. One of the new vulnerable populations we're seeing more and more of is the transgender, as I said. These transgender kids can make sometimes up to $1,000 for a sexual act. So then, and this is where our problems are now, what do we do after we're done with our cases? What happens to these victims? Because let me tell you, we're losing most of them. We are. We're trying hard. We're fighting a good fight. We do what we can. Bridget stalks the hell out of these people. We try to save them. We will help you. We will help you. We will help you. But how do you tell a young man or young woman or transgender youth, we will help you. We'll help you get a job at McDonald's making $10 an hour, when they know from experience they can go on the street and make $1,000 for a date, what they call dates or plays, depending on the juveniles you're talking about. How do you reach that? It's very difficult. We have a lot of sleepless nights dealing with that. And that's kind of what we're seeing. What we're seeing now, where the need rises, is when we're through this process. That's where the need is now. Mm-hmm. We're getting the hang of it. We're identifying it. People are aware. People are awake finally and realizing that these kids don't want to be walking the streets, don't want to be on Backpage. It is what it is. How they got there, it doesn't matter anymore. They're there. We can help them. We pull them out of it. A lot of them end up in Schumann. I would say most of ours end up in Schumann if they're underage. And at the beginning of our relationship with Dr. Burke, that was one of our arguments. I'm in law enforcement. They're in Schumann. I hate to say this. They're safe. They're off the streets, and I know where they are. Mm-hmm. Her big thing is, but they're victims. I hate that they're in Schumann. So I think over the years, she's kind of realized more and more to just ignore me. Most people do. But if they're there, I at least know where they are. It's not perfect. The system's not perfect. And I think because this is such a new thing, the system needs tweaks. And we're slowly educating the people that are in place to do that. I'm not in a place to change the system. But I am loud, I'm obnoxious, and I'm willing to push the system and try to get people to realize that at the end of this, I'm going to take this 16, 17-year-old child who has put a trafficker in jail, who's done a great thing, who in most cases are in great places. We've been working with them and talking to them every day and providing them with food, clothing, housing, jobs, whatever they need. Where do they go when we're done? Right back to the communities where it happened to begin with. Something's got to change that. Something's got to fix that. And because we really don't have housing in Pittsburgh for adults or for juveniles. The last adult we had, we actually took to Philadelphia to a place called Dawn's Place, which was fantastic. We do have some things in place, but a lot of them are walk-away places that don't give the continuous care that they have when we're working with them throughout our investigation. That's where the need is right now. That's what needs to be fixed, because that is broken. Okay, I've got like 15 minutes. So this is the industries we see here. As I said, sex trafficking is what we see mostly here. We do have labor trafficking cases currently in Pittsburgh, and domestic servitude. We do not have cases in Pittsburgh, but I'm not saying it's not here. It's hard to identify. It's usually in more upscale neighborhoods and less likely to talk to us. But I do believe it is here. I would love to do more research and get more involved in that community. The thing with these cases is I am it in Pittsburgh that work these cases. I know you're very disappointed. I am too. But I wish there was more of us. But it's me and Bridget. And we do have some law enforcement that also contributes with this as much as they can, because they also have to continue work for the city or the county or the state. These cases are one case at a time is all a person can take, in the sense that they are so much work. Mm-hmm. I constantly have to contact victims. I constantly have to make sure they're in the right place. It's nonstop. So we ultimately really only focus on one case at a time. Right now I have four cases, but they're in different stages of investigation and prosecution, and in some cases sentencing. So we have it kind of spread out. But if I got a call tomorrow, which we did with these four victims, of course we jump on that and we move forward and do the best we can. Investigation and state prosecution is getting better. The laws have gotten stronger. So I think that down the line we're going to see the district attorney's office also getting involved more than they already are. I mean, then they would love that. The district attorney's office would be great doing this with us. We would do it more hand in hand. If you have any questions, just ask.
Yeah. What is the volume of your calls? How what's that like?
I say we get a lot of calls, but I would say most of them are not trafficking. I would say most of the calls I get do not rise to the level of actually trafficking. They might be smuggling, or they might be if human trafficking, there's got to be a commercial angle. So if a child is just prostituting herself and actually getting the money herself, that is not human trafficking.
Yeah.
So we go to Schumann. We were at Schumann just this week talking to a girl. She was not advertising on Backpage. She was keeping the money. I think she's probably lying. I know you're shocked because people lie to the FBI. Isn't that outrageous? I never thought that would ever happen, but we are lied to more than you can imagine. And a lot of these victims don't want to be called victims and are like, I've done this myself. And we kind of tripped her up a little bit. And I'm like, really? You've never? Well, there's this guy, and then she shut down. Without a victim, I do not have a case. Even if I know who the trafficker is, if I do not have a victim, I don't have a case. So if I lose my victim, victim runs away, something happens, I do not have a case. And I could be a year into an investigation, and my victim will run away. And Bridget and I have literally driven through neighborhoods yelling her name out windows. Because I know they're in this neighborhood, and I know they're somewhere looking for them.
We don't stand out at all.
No. And usually we get, like, law enforcement will help us now. We have a pretty good reputation. And they know that, you know, we're just not too wackos. A little bit, but
yeah,
they trust us. And then we have the fugitive task force. If there's opportunity warrants, they will help us look for them. And so we get a lot of calls, but we have to, they're not, most of them are not human trafficking. Yeah.
How do we get in touch with you? Phone number?
Do not call me. you can call me. You can call the FBI. Do you want an email or a phone number?
Both.
Tricked me, didn't you? My email is denise.holtz, H-O-L-T-Z, at ic.fbi.gov. Denise, D-E-N-I-S-E, dot Holtz, H-O-L-T-Z, at ic.fbi.gov. You can send me emails, and that goes to my phone. And if you want presentations given, I will give them. Sister Joel is much better presenter than I am. I just like kind of wing it and go,
I love it.
Yeah, I'm a little bit on the edge. But, you know, please, do you want my phone number too? I was trying to get that way. No, I'm kidding. 412-432-4338. Please call if you need it, or if you want to just get involved. We need people to be aware and involved. Yeah.
I have two questions. You said that over 18, they are not your...
No, I did not say that.
All right, well, but my question
is,
I work at Women's Choice Network, and we had a young girl that we were suspicious about, but she had a very close mouth.
Mm-hmm.
She was waiting until she got to be 18. I'm going to be 18 in 3 weeks. I'm going to be 18 in 2 weeks. And, you know, if she opens up, is it too late?
No, it's not. It's not too late. Some of our victims do. We had a victim recently. It was 24.
24?
Mm-hmm. And she's been sold the first time at 14. So she was really the textbook, what you would say, textbook victim, in the sense she was tattooed with his name. And she had been, the first time that she was hit the street, she was bought, and then she was sold many times to traffickers over time, and we got her at 24. All of that stuff is in play. Even when she was 24 and in Pittsburgh, the part we worked on, which is the part she was in Pittsburgh, we gave out the other, she was in Philadelphia for part of it, and where was she at the end of that state?
Boston, right?
No, not Boston, but the one that was out west.
Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
I forget. But, I mean, there's other people involved. That was before you were 18. No, that's still open. But once she's over the age of 18, we have to prove forced fraud or coercion.
Okay.
That's the only thing different.
Okay.
And we can do that. We have had a lot of people.
We know that when she was 14, she was coerced, and now she's 18.
Well, it was 14, it doesn't matter. They don't have to be coerced. 14, they have no say.
Right.
So
after they turn 18.
After they turn 18, we have to prove forced fraud or coercion, but we still consider them trafficking victims, and we'll still work with them. It's a little harder. This makes my job harder. But that's fine. I'm up for the challenge. So. And the prosecutor. But no, once they turn 18, and if it happened and started at 12, we can go back and work all that.
All right. Now, do I understand you saying that your typical foster home is not a good place for these
No, kids? No. We have great foster homes. But what happens is they leave foster homes. Usually they're chronic runaways. Most of our cases, most of these kids are chronic runaways, and they get into a placement, and they get somewhere with great. We have one, though, that's now in a foster home that is a rock star. And it was the right fit, I think. And she's doing fantastic. Matter of fact, she just graduated from high school, and she's gone into college, and she's doing fantastic. That happens. But But most of these kids will run away and go back to the environment, go back to the moms, go back to the dads, go back to the aunts. Everyone's an aunt or a cousin. And they'll go back into that environment where it all happened anyway.
They can just run free.
Yeah. And they're really, no matter how good the foster care system is, that they leave and they go back. Yeah.
We adopted a young girl, and she started acting out at 17. She has three children with three different men. We were just at her graduation last night from a school. It's the second time we've seen her in 4 years. We're beginning to reconnect with her. But, you know, she started running out of broken road. Mm-hmm. She had the issues and supposedly had counseling.
Yeah.
So that's just an example.
It is an example.
We loved her well. She had straight A's in high school with Charm Valley and all of that. She was part of our church here. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
And that's what, as being a member of a church, but you've never given up on her. And a lot of people do.
We're watching for her.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people give up. I mean, I've even talked to probation officers and police officers, and I'm like, our husbands are in law enforcement, and my husband sometimes says to me, "Oh, you think you're going to stay in another one?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not going to try. Sorry. I am going to try." And sometimes he's right. One of my victims actually threatened to beat up Bridget and was going at her, and I had to, I yell a lot. I had to yell and pull her off and say, you know, in this high-pitched screaming voice that your victim services are concluded. You can't act like this. But nobody had really ever, you have to remember, nobody had parented these kids. And in this particular individual, about a month before then, we were in the car, and it was last Easter, and I had one son, I had two stepsons, and then a son, a five-year-old, and I had a carload, you can imagine how full rotten this kid is. It took us about 8 years to become a mother, so you better, you know, he's rotten, let's just be honest. And I had about 50 things in the backseat for Easter because it was like a mini Christmas. It's ridiculous. And one of the things was back there, and she picked it up. She was riding in the backseat. I was taking her somewhere and with Bridget and me, and she picked up something. And I said, "Oh, does it remind you of Easter when you were growing up?" And she looked at me, excuse my language, she's like, "That fucking got an Easter basket? What are you talking about?" And then right when I get aggravated, I realize that's my aha moment. And I think about her a lot because she's now missing from us. We'd love to get her back. But that's my humble moment that no one ever showed her love. Ever. Ever in her lifetime. So you cannot blame her. This is how she responds to certain things. Because no one's ever said, no one's called her on it. No one's punished her. No one, you know, said, "Oh, you got an A on a test?" Like we do with our kids. Very, very, very heartbreaking when you see these kids. Yeah.
What's Schumann?
Never mind, that's Schumann. Schumann is a juvenile detention center where when these kids are found, they are usually arrested for prostitution, they are taken there. But even if they're just juvenile, if they're adjudicated delinquent, like they're chronic runaways, there's usually warrants out for them and they are in there as well. It's not the best scenario, I would be first to admit that, but it gets them off the street. And our one victim, who is our rock star, we always go back to when we're having bad days, said it saved her life. Because she said, "I would have gone back." And she said, "Don't judge me. I was December, I was homeless, and I was cold and hungry." Mm-hmm. How can you judge that? I don't judge that. She did what she had to do, and this guy took total advantage of that trafficker. He's now doing it on.
They become survivors.
They are absolutely survivors. And we've never been, we've never been there. They're in that mode. Okay, so I keep going backwards because I don't know how to word this thing. Oh my gosh, look at me.
Yeah.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm challenged a little bit. Okay, so these are seven. This is the coalition that we have created. That anyone is welcome to join. If you want to get involved, if you want to be proactive, this is a great coalition. We have people that are lawyers. We have people that are social workers. We have just concerned citizens. We have a lot of college kids that want to get involved, and we have college kids that will go, and they'll go to foreign countries that have trafficking problems. And really, really make a difference. We're very proud of what we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years. So this is what we need. This is the basic needs we got 5 minutes. Okay. We need food. Ultimately, short-term needs. Most of the victims that we get, when we get the call, we go and pick them up. We bring them to our office. They are starving. They have not eaten. They need a place to stay, which can be complicated. They need clothing because they never have. Or they're dressed like they were the night before when they were prostituting. So we have to give them food, clothes. We had some that were barefoot. We actually had the four girls we recently got, three of them tried to get away from the state police because they were so scared and ran away from the state troopers in the snow barefoot and went to a house. And then ultimately they were taken back into custody and called us and we went and got them and made them safe. So they need physical health care, mental health care, they need legal assistance, language, possibly, and transportation. The coalition provides all this. But we continually need more people involved to continue with this, what we have, what we've set up here. Indicators, and Sister Joel did a great job of saying this, what we see mostly is the victim, a juvenile engaged in commercial sexual activity. If you call me and say, I have this juvenile, I will immediately talk to the juvenile. And we went last week to Schumann's Juvenile Detention Center to talk to a girl. She's not willing to talk, thinks she might be lying, we haven't given up on her, we'll go back. We're like a bad penny, we keep turning up. We're at Schumann a lot to talk to another victim we have in there. So we'll always kind of say hi, and ultimately over time we do get some that will go the distance, but some that will not. Just aren't willing to relate their story yet. The victim recruited for one job, forced another, compelled to perform sexual acts. Did they have freedom of movement? And then they have contact with family or friends. And a lot of these I'm going to go through because she's already, Sister Joel's already gone through this. Indicators for minors, which is really what we see, is our main focus is kids. But of course, adult victims, we will work the same with the same passion. They go AWOL from placements, and that's usually what we see. They chronically run away, but they do. And usually they're given, like, if you ask them, we'll say, do you think it's fair that he's making this money and you're doing the work? Well, he gave you this purse. It was $50. Because no one's ever given him a $50 purse before. Now, meanwhile, he's made $10,000 off of them, but they got this $50 purse. That's a lot for them. They've never had that. So we see that quite a bit. They have an older boyfriend, as Sister Joel said, and she mentioned like maybe a 14-year-old girl with a 19-year-old. Really, that's not what we see. Usually it's a 14-year-old girl and a 40-year-old man. It's really an eye-opening, like, are you kidding me? Age difference, not just, could it be age appropriate? It's a little weird, but, you know. Are they easily controlled, coerced, or manipulated? And that's that at-risk group that are on the street, that are hungry, that are tired, that have no place to go. That's at-risk youth. And unfortunately, Pittsburgh's got quite a few of them, quite a lot of them. Do they have a tattoo or brand? We see this quite often. And unexplained income or material possessions they would have gotten from. And of course, this is my favorite quote because here's the deal. We have to convince them, in those cases, they are victims. They will not. I think one of the girls we talked to just recently immediately said, I am no victim. I understand that. But I think that maybe we can help you. I think maybe you've been taken advantage of and we have to go out of a different way. This is William Miller. He was the very first trafficker that we worked in Pittsburgh. It wasn't perfect, but we got the job done and we learned. Every time we work a case, we've come a long way in, I would say, the last two or three years. He was 38 years old, lived in the Hill District. He pimped out our 15-year-old homeless victim, who is now a complete rock star and has graduated from college. She was on Backpage.com. He was sentenced to 15 years. And this was actually a plea down. He was looking at 15, but he pledged so that our juvenile did not have to take the stand, did not have to do anything. We got her immediately into care and help, and she never had to see the inside of a courtroom, which is a huge, that's what we always aim for. Our goal in the coalition, even though I'm law enforcement, I wouldn't put the bad guy in jail, our goal is, what can we do for this victim to earn a better place at the end than they are in the beginning? And if that means whatever, we're willing to do that, and willing to put our money where our mouth is and make that happen. That is our goal, is to get that. And in this case, it was that because she just lived her life without having to do that.
Sorry.
It is a website where you can go to, and they say there's no prostitution on there. But if you go to the adult entertainment section, there's prostitution. And they don't quite say prostitution, but and then you can look at, I get called all the time, and they say, look at this girl on Backpage, we think she's underage, or something. I do get calls like that. National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is a great resource. They will contact us. They're involved with the underage human trafficking victims. And then Polaris Project is a nationwide 800 number for the, so we get contacts from both of them, and they'll say they have people look at this, and they'll contact us.
Is there a website for Western Pennsylvania Human Trafficking Coalition?
Yes, I don't know what it is.
That's not good.
If you look up Project to End Human Trafficking, PEHT, you can hit on the thing and go from there.
It's changed altogether.
I am not computer savvy. Does anybody pick up on that? I can't work this thing. So when we first started the website, it was really lame.
Yeah.
And we never changed it enough. So now we have people that are, we now have volunteers that work the website. It is very nice. Yeah.
When you talk about coalition and you discuss things that you need, you said housing on there. So what, foster homes for you?
No, well, foster homes would be great. For juvenile victims, I don't really know what the fix is. And I guess that's where we, in the coalition, we actually have a steering committee that is kind of is the head of the coalition or whatever that tries to. I don't really know what the fix is, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know how to make it right. Because they are still juveniles, and they're still very much at risk. I guess we really haven't made that link yet how we do. Adults, there is some placements. There is Living in Liberty is one. We haven't used them. Well, we have once, but there is some places for adults. But we have had adults that have been just guided to these places and don't want rules. I mean, they're 24 years old. They've never had a rule and always have a time. Not a ton of money, but to them a ton of money. They were given something, and now they're in a place with rules. So that's not quite working either. It's not quite working at the end. So that's really where all the 101 stuff that we talked about years ago, that we get that now. We're identifying, we're doing a better job. It's not perfect, but at the end, we're failing. I hate to say that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Well, we have them. There's some sort of a success. But once we're done, there is a failure there. I don't know what the answer is. And that's where the coalition, that's where we're putting our... now, like in Philadelphia, they have Covenant House, which would be fantastic. We do not have that here, which would be fantastic. That is juveniles.
Yeah, 15-minute break, visit the tables, the bathroom. Your next session will start at 11:15 approximately. Let's thank Sister Mary Jo and the Dean. A lot of stuff coming to you. Some of you are probably very shocked at some of the things you've heard today, and you want to do something, and you need to be more and more informed. The coalition, I think, is really it's like you said, you can handle one case and it's like you're overwhelmed. And at churches oftentimes, in counseling scenarios and pastoral care, I feel that way. We have someone under hospice and I'm doing a funeral tomorrow and I'm counseling with this man that I mentioned earlier, and I feel overwhelmed. I can't do anything else. But be better informed, take it to your churches if you're not a pastor, your laity, and have a plan in place and see what your churches may be willing to do. So, Father, we thank you, God in heaven. I believe that Sister Joel and Denise would be here to answer a couple more questions and hang out, that others are going to go. We thank you and praise you. We ask, Father God, that we can find, just like Reed Carpenter was talking about, Lord, what's the answer here, the end result, like the Covenant House, Father God. Can't we develop this in the city of Pittsburgh? Lord, have mercy. The stuff we spend money on, tickets for a hockey game, I don't want to start preaching, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.